You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome, everyone, to Lead to Soar. This is Mel Butcher, and of course, I'm joined by Michelle Redfern. Michelle, how are you doing?
Hello, everyone. Hey, Mel. I'm doing extremely well. Thank you very much.
I am really excited for our topic today. We're talking about how to make your mentoring program worthwhile. So this is an episode for leaders of companies, HR leaders. This is a discussion you need to hear. And we've talked about mentoring in the past for women, but we really want to get into the nitty-gritty on programs around mentoring, even though mentoring programs have questionable efficacy, let's say. Companies still want to roll them out because it looks good. Employees ask for them. So they're not going away anytime soon. So we got to figure out how to do it right.
Yes, we do. And a bit of a preamble to that. So let's know that I have very, very strong views about mentoring. And let me just insert a really important word before mentoring: strategic. We've got to be strategic about these programs. And when we have a strategic program and we have strategic mentors, women will advance. So this is the lens that we apply to this. And you're right, Mel, this episode is for people in organizations who are making decisions about strategic talent management. And you're right. We know that people entering the workforce now out of college and university, they know the importance of mentors. So we know our young people, the next generation of leaders, know the importance of mentors and are actively seeking mentors. We know that women are told a lot to get a mentor. And we know that mentoring is part of the fabric of learning, development, and talent management. But gee whiz, let's do it right rather than what's always been done.
Absolutely. So to kick us off, why don't you talk a little bit about how the company can identify the needs that they have for a mentoring program and also think through some of the individual's needs for mentoring?
At an organizational level, there is no doubt that, as I said, that a mentoring program, a strategic mentoring program, can be part of a suite of solutions or a suite of offerings around strategic talent management. And again, let's examine that word strategic. Anything is strategic when it's aligned with a goal. So what are the goals of the organization? Why does the organization exist? And what is its strategic talent management goals? So if I look at one of my clients, a national, enormous group who have a strategic talent management plan, and it is linked to the outcomes that the organization is trying to accomplish for its people, its customers, and its shareholders. And part of that strategic talent management plan is we know we have to mentor up-and-coming leaders. And that's the key. So the company has a need. We need to outperform. Then second layer is, and we need to have a people plan that helps us to attract, retain, and advance the best and brightest people. Because guess what? We're knowledge workers and our people are, I hate this expression, but are our greatest asset. So we need to nurture that asset just like we would any other asset. And thirdly, we have demands. We know that the 21st century employee team member is looking for support from those that have been there before to help them gain necessary skills to increase their readiness to contribute at different levels in the organization. So there's a multi-layer there, and that's the strategic approach, Mel.
Where I want to go next is something that we have to say out loud, because this still comes up, even though we all know this deep down inside. Not every executive, not every senior leader is going to be a good or effective mentor. Like, remember when you were in college and you took, I don't know, let's say calculus, And you had this math whiz teaching the course, and they were really great at doing math, but maybe they weren't fantastic at explaining it. And it's no different with your team members. Some of them are going to be really excellent, really expert, knowledgeable, completely in their domain, and they're not necessarily going to have the skills to transfer that knowledge or bring someone up. So, Michelle, maybe talk a little bit about how mentors for a program, a corporate program, can and should be selected.
And I just really want to re-emphasize what you've said, Mel. Don't assume that a person who has reached executive level in your organization is A, going to have the appetite, and B, going to have the skills for mentoring. Now, we all know that there's a bunch of myths around mentoring. And one of them is that I will, as a CEO, as a C-suite, as an executive person, I'm naturally going to be good and want to mentor other people. I know we should want to mentor other people, and I know we should be good at it, but often we're not. So that has got to be part of the design of the program, is to say, let's examine the facts. We're saying to leaders, what are the brutal facts? Jim Collins, Good to Great. What are your brutal truths that you must confront? So, brutal truth number one, not everyone in your executive team is going to make a great mentor. So what are the skills required to be a great mentor, and how are those aligned to those goals that the organization has? So number one, let's make sure that mentors are very, very carefully selected to be mentors. Number two, let's make sure that we give them access to training, to skills development, being mentored to be a mentor. So mentor the mentor programs is, well, I'll be honest, Mel, that's what I do in my programs with my clients. I work with the mentors and I work with the mentees to help them understand what strategic mentoring looks like and what makes it look good, you know, what's going to make it go well, and also what's going to get in the way. Look, here are the barriers that you're going to confront or the problems, and how do we build the skills or hone our skills to be ready for them. So that's rule number one. Be very, very considered about the mentors that you're going to put in the program. And then number two, be very considered about what their skills are. What are their top three skills that they are expert in and that they are willing to and capable to mentor on? So for example, Mel, if you said, oh, goodness me, that university teacher of mine's not very good. He might be good at teaching calculus, but he's not very good at mentoring around it. I'm going to ask Michelle to mentor me on calculus. Now, I am a great mentor. Don't get me wrong. I don't know that I'd be particularly good at calculus because I couldn't do calculus if my life depended on it. So I'm not the right mentor for you, Mel. I'm the right mentor for you for a range of other things. And here are the skill sets that I've got. But don't pair you with me to be your calculus mentor. Just the same as if you've got a person, a woman in your mentoring program who really needs to increase her networking skills, because we know networking is working, strategic networking and networks is part of an executive's DNA. Don't pair her with the executive who perhaps has an inward focus, is highly shy and introverted and doesn't enjoy networking or see the value in it. So there's a very good practical example about skills and the way that you pair people.
Right. Not all mentors can teach all things. This is a good time for us to go back to our leadership definition. Leadership is using the greatness in you to achieve and sustain extraordinary outcomes by engaging the greatness in others. So what we're asking HR leaders, other executive leaders to do is really think about how are you going to engage the greatness in others through your mentoring program, especially by the selection that you make of mentors.
The other thing too is, can we not just focus on confidence in these programs? And if they're programs for women, can we be teaching them, mentoring them about critical skills development, please?
Yeah, I kind of vomit in my mouth a little every time I hear the word confidence now. This is not what most of your women need. And I think that when people cling to the notion of women need more confidence, it's completely based in gender stereotype.
100%. As Susan says, confidence is based on competence. When you are competent, you will be confident. So I can stand up in front of a room of, well, I've just done it this week, 250 people, and talk about how women can have a career that soars based on having BQ, EQ, and SQ skills, but they must have business intelligence. I can stand up in front of those people without notes, talk about it. And one of the young women came up to me and said, how did you become so confident? I said, because I know my stuff. I'm competent at these things. So competence. So what are the competencies that the women in your organization need to build? They need to build their business, strategic and financial acumen and their drive for success. They need to know how to run a P&L business. They need to know how to grow the business. They need to know how to network with important stakeholders, both internally and externally to the company. So that's the stuff. The other will come after that.
What we're trying to pull apart here is that you've got to kind of identify the specific needs of the individual. Do they need development in engaging other people? Do they need it in business outcomes, business strategic and financial acumen? Or do they need it in some sort of internal trait, tapping into their own greatness? And then matching that with mentors who can really touch on those specific needs. So I wonder, Michelle, if you have thoughts on how the leadership that is implementing this program can really train the mentors strategically for what they're being asked to do.
Well, they come and talk to us for a start, of course, because we will ask mentors to examine a bunch of different things. So a self-assessment, where am I now? Where am I now around my mindsets about women, work, career, leadership, power? Because gender dynamics come into play when we're mentoring women. And unexamined mindsets, so those beliefs, those deep-seated beliefs that we have that we don't often think about, they create thoughts and feelings. Those thoughts and feelings create actions, and those actions have consequences. For example, I might think that women with small humans at home are going to want to do their work and they'll be going to be great, but they won't want to travel and they won't want exposure to, they won't want to do international travel or relocation. So as a mentor, I'm going to, if I don't examine that mindset, my mentoring and my advice that I give is very much going to be crafted and molded around the fact that I'm going to give her advice about how she can manage her work-life balance, staying where she is and not putting her hand up for international assignments, conferences, travel, things like that. If I'd examined that mindset, I'd go, you know what, I shouldn't assume I know what this woman wants, needs, and also what her home environment is. And I should say, here are the important things when you are traversing the career jungle gym. You need to be able to place yourself in different positions. You need to have, as Susan calls it, a lattice work of experiences across the organization, across the industry. You need to have customer-facing roles, staff roles, operations roles in your track record of accomplishment, which means you might have to move. You might have to go here. You might have to travel. You might have to put yourself in situations where you're out of your comfort zone. So unless we examine our mindsets about gender, those things might happen. The other thing is around really helping mentors not fall into the trap of over-mentoring women on their EQ skills. So we want them to keep them going, but we know that women benefit from the positive assumption that we all have very high EQ. But the reality is we want you to over-index on those business skills, those critical business skills. They need to be a priority because 97% of the career advice, which includes training, coaching, summits, conferences, and mentoring directed towards women, does not overtly include developing and demonstrating your business strategic and financial acumen. So that must be the core pillar of the mentoring. That's how I train mentors to effectively strategically mentor women.
Right. And part of what we're getting at here is your mentoring program going to be set up to really help people advance. And if you are serious about advancing women, you have to do what Michelle just described. It has to over-index in the skill areas where research shows women are consistently under-mentored and under-guided.
And again, Mel, it's linked to your strategic talent management plan and your business's strategic goals, which are often, how do we close our leadership gender gap? Because it's no longer a good look. That's number one. It's no longer fair. That's number two. And number three, we know our business will be far more high performing, i.e. it will go from good to great when we balance out gender across our leadership roles. So again, this link, why aren't women progressing? Well, listen to every single one of our episodes and you'll know why. But this is one of these strategic tools to close the gap. Expose women to people and experiences that help them develop and demonstrate business, strategic, and financial acumen.
I've got just a couple more points here I want us to touch on. And I want to go back to gender dynamics a bit for a moment, because I have in engineering encountered men who are deeply uncomfortable mentoring women. I wonder if you would like to comment.
They're not the right people to include in your mentoring program until they've addressed that mindset. And HR, L&D executives who are designing, procuring, and sponsoring these programs really need to ask themselves the hard questions. If you know that a person is deeply uncomfortable with women, not only is that person not right for the mentoring program, they actually need an intervention anyway. So they need a tactical intervention to say, here's the way we do things around here. And holding mindsets that are negative about women or being deeply uncomfortable being with women means you have an opportunity to be better.
I want to just say an unpopular opinion here that sometimes it's worth reconsidering if certain individuals actually should be managing other humans, and maybe they're in the wrong position.
And not everyone wants to manage other humans, and that is okay. We have strategic individual contributors in organizations. I will say, though, that people do business with people. And this is where the EQ skills come in, Mel, and we've got to really teach many more men how important EQ skills are. And I know in Susan's book, No Ceiling, No Walls, there's a dozen or so pages in, there's a chapter on, well, if women need this, what do men need? And we want men to show up in a way that is far more around engaging the greatness in others, less ego and more in service of. Now, is that a slash at individual men? It absolutely is not. It is actually a slash at the patriarchy and the system that tells men and women how they should be. And those notions of how men should behave, well, they're outdated and frankly, they're harmful. So they're harmful to the individual men, to men collectively and the people around them. So if you have men in your organization that are deeply uncomfortable with women, and with people management, coach them. Intervene. Don't just say, oh, well, that's just so-and-so. That's just the way he is. It's actually not acceptable. And that person, you're not helping that person reach their full potential by not addressing it. So we must intervene in those cases.
I want to wrap on a point, a bit of myth-busting, really. So I like to draw a distinction between mentoring and relationships that look like sponsorship or someone who is a champion. So recapping here, mentorship at the most simple level is sharing knowledge, helping someone grow in some way. Strategic mentoring is really taking a look at what are the skills this person needs to grow and advance. And what we know from research and working with hundreds of organizations is that on average, most of the time, where women need mentoring is in that area of business outcomes, business strategic and financial acumen. So sponsorship and champions are more like a relationship where someone is advocating for you on your behalf, usually behind closed doors. The reason that I want to bring this up is because there seems to be a myth or perhaps even an unspoken assumption that the best mentor or the best sponsor for a woman is another woman. And this is not true. It's not true. This is verifiable with research. And the reasons why this is the case are complicated. I'm going to pull up a bit of that research to share in just a moment. But Michelle, do you want to comment?
Well, there's one very mathematical reason why that's not the case either, Mel. There's more men at the top. So there are more men at the top available for mentoring anyway. Number two, the women that are at the top are overburdened with being asked to be everything to every other woman on the planet. Now, I've got to say, I think there is a duty to the sisterhood and all that kind of stuff, but they are already expected to do everything for women anyway. And the reality is, let's not assume that every woman's going to be a great mentor either. I did a post recently, you know, women can be assholes too. That's genderless. And we also want to leave the assholes alone, but let's make sure that we're, again, being strategic. If there are high-performing executives who are seen as great candidates for mentoring, they should be mentoring the up-and-coming talent, particularly the up-and-coming talented women in your organisations, irrespective of gender. But the reality is you're likely to have more men than women there anyway. So I think it's a mathematical equation, Mel.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to tack on to that quote from a researcher named Rosalind Chow. And in this, this is some spoken word, right? She's talking about this conundrum around men and women and sponsorship. And here's what she said. So in that research, it's that male sponsors are more effective than female sponsors, regardless of the gender of the person who's being sponsored. So if you're a woman working with a man, you're just as well off as a man working with a man. The people who are, I don't want to say hurt because that sounds terrible, but comparatively speaking, female sponsors, regardless of whether or not the protege is male or female, tend to be less effective. And by less effective, I mean their recommendations are seen as less credible. They're not as influential in actually getting the people that they recommend hired. So why do I think that is? That's an excellent question that my doctoral student, Elizabeth Campbell, I'm sponsoring her, we're working on this. And one thing that we have found that does seem to mitigate a little bit of the hit that female sponsors take is tenure in the organization. The general gist of the story is that if you take as given that gender discrimination continues to exist, at least in the promotion and retention process, the perception then is that women who are able to succeed and get into leadership positions are especially competent. So that's the end of that quote. And again, this was Rosalind Chow. And I bring this up wanting to really emphasize the complexity here because all of these underlying gender dynamics that are happening, even when a woman makes it to a very high, very successful level. So bottom line here is bust this myth in your head that a woman who's coming up in your field needs to be mentored or sponsored by another woman.
It is brilliant. And I want to tease out the piece about women not being as effective. And here's the reality of it. When a woman at an executive or a boardroom table speaks up on behalf of another woman, there is an immediate assumption that she's just playing the gender card. And it is real. And I have had executive women say to me, Michelle, I don't want to speak up because I see the eye rolls. And I've got to tell you, I have experienced it. I see the eye rolls. Oh, here she goes again, banging on about the women. So there's an immediate reduction in the, I guess, the integrity of that recommendation. So this is why, men, we need you to step up. These are the allyship activities that you can do. Be in that room, be a champion. That means I want to see Mel Butcher promoted to a P&L role. We're about to do succession planning. I'm going to be speaking up on her behalf because I've been mentoring her for the last 6 months and I can see her potential. So that's the reality of it, Mel. We are automatically dismissed, not by everyone, but there she goes playing the gender card. That's the reality. So I really appreciate that research.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. I think that's a wrap for us on the mentoring topic, making your mentoring program strategic and effective for everyone. And on our next episode, we're going to talk about something that's kind of related, succession planning. So stay tuned for the next episode.
And I will leave you with one of my favorite quotes, which are, women are over-mentored and under-sponsored and under-promoted. But the reality is, when they are mentored strategically in a strategic mentoring program, you will close your leadership gender gap.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Mel.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.